Welcome to Listening with Leaders. I'm Doug Knoll, lawyer turned peacemaker. I teach executive leaders how to listen to emotions rather than words so that they can become the leaders everyone wants to follow. And I teach those same leaders how to be authentically present, available, and connected to their families, despite being insanely busy. I have learned that we are 98% emotional and only 2% rational. Learning how to listen to emotions is, in my experience, the foundational skill of life. Stick around to the end of the show, and I'll reveal how you can be on our next guest in 15 to 20 minutes. So let's get started. Will Pearson, welcome to Listening with Leaders. You are the co-founder and co-CEO of Scolero.io. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
So I've interviewed you on Authority Magazine, but many people probably have not read that interview. Tell me a little bit about your backstory. Let everybody know who you are and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. I was born in Indianapolis originally. Like to claim my Midwest roots. It's kind of kindness and generosity and things that people say about Midwesterners. I try to convey that for sure. After graduating college, I started a career in retail and e-commerce. I worked for a few years at Target at their headquarters in Minneapolis. And then I got the bug to get into tech and get into the startup world. So I moved to San Francisco and I joined Vivino, the wine app, while I was there, and worked there for 4.5-5 years, during which we grew the e-commerce business there from almost nothing to a couple hundred million in top line revenue. And it was there that I accidentally learned a lot about email marketing and lifecycle marketing. And that's because as we sold wine, we found that email marketing was far and away the most effective channel to do that. And my now business co-founder, Brent, he was the first marketing hire there and he was running email marketing. So we worked really closely together, kind of devising strategies, looking at technologies, you know, figuring out a way to scale that business through email. And as we found success doing that at Vivino, we found that we both had a little bit of a bug to be entrepreneurs and start our own companies. So we left and we had lots of ideas on companies to start, but really the lowest barrier of entry was email marketing. So that's how Scolero came to be in 2019. And we define lifecycle marketing as email marketing, SMS marketing, push notifications, and work with a lot of B2C type companies that have an email list. They need to nurture them. They need to focus on retention. And we offer some software and some services around that.
So you're in the kind of what I would call the opt-in warm email niche, not so much the cold email niche.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. We tell our clients that we will optimize your existing list, but we can't necessarily, you know, add to it. We do some B2B work as well, but cold outbound is not really our specialty.
Right. And you started in 2019. So how do you manage the pandemic?
Yeah, we started at the end of 2019 as well.
Just whenever
we've basically only been a pandemic company. For us, I think there were actually some positives. You know, we had a few brands that had budget constraints. You know, they were in the travel space that hurt us. But otherwise, you know, as things moved more online into digital, a lot of companies found themselves realizing that they didn't have a good email marketing strategy. They didn't know how to retain all these new customers they were getting. So that helped us just from a business standpoint. From a company standpoint, we originally, I was in San Francisco at the time. We had an office in San Francisco and we started to build a team in Mexico City. And we really thought we'd have, you know, those two offices working really closely together. As the pandemic continued, we became a little less focused on regional placement of our team, but still try to keep some hubs as well. But, you know, I really envisioned a lot of traveling and going to see clients and working with our different offices. And that really took a few years to come about because of the pandemic.
Your company is mostly remote today?
Yeah, exactly. So we're in San Francisco, New York, Mexico City, and Copenhagen. Everyone's working remotely, but we do have office space, WeWork type spaces available for those who do want to come in or need to come in and work with others.
Now, how have you found growing an organization remotely to be?
Yeah, I mean it's good and bad, for sure. I think the good of it is just the immense amount of talent that we've been able to talk to and hire and bring in. And then also, it's very quick for us to start working with our clients as well, because we pretty much handle everything on Zoom. So we don't have to go to their office to set things up or anything like that. It's just, we just can just get going. And the challenges are probably, pretty obvious too, right? It's easy to fall into some habits of always being behind a computer screen, both personally and as a team. And when we do get together as a team, from my standpoint, we collaborate better and more ideas come to life. But I don't necessarily quantify that. I don't know if that's true or it's just something that I feel. We try to keep it balanced where we do get together occasionally, but it's not really forced that much, and just kind of let people be comfortable as they can.
Interesting. I mean, people, we read in the literature that there are a lot of companies that are forcing people to come back to work and employees are resisting. And then you hear about trying to find the right balance between being remote and coming together so people feel like they're part of a culture. And I think every company approaches it differently, and some are more successful than others. It sounds like you found a balance that works for you guys.
Yeah, I think so. Having people at least close by to each other gives them the option. And I think that option, there's some extroverts that want to see people every day and some introverts who don't ever want to see people. You can't, in our opinion, you can't force people to do things they don't want to. And instead we want them to try to set them up with the best tools possible to collaborate, even if it is remotely. And yeah, so far it's working pretty well.
So what is it that gets you up in the morning and gets you excited to get onto the computer and get onto Zoom and start talking with people and working your teams?
Yeah, in this role with this company, we talk to a lot of interesting people, and I have found that my own leadership skills have enhanced quite a bit. By learning from others and actually even clients who pay us for a service, I'm still learning a lot from them at times too. So, I might meet with within an hour today, even I met with a brand new startup CEO, super eager getting going. And that followed by a founder CEO of a $300 million company as well. So they're in very different stages, but there's a lot to learn from both of them on what to do and what not to do at times. I love meeting those types of leaders and seeing what they do well and trying to incorporate that into what I do, which is also what excites me of working with my team and seeing them develop and take on new projects and new skills and see that growth happen there. I really love just developing the other people on the team and seeing that happen.
It's very interesting that you're talking to brand new CEOs and CEOs who are in major growth mode. If you think back on all these people, the CEOs and leaders that you've talked to, what do you think the number one lesson is that you've learned?
Yeah, I think as a business leader, you have a thousand things you want to do at all times, right? And the ones who seem to get it right are the ones who can take that 1,000 item list and narrow it down to five, let's say. Maybe you can do five things in a month or a quarter or a year, and then get people on board with that and be able to communicate that to others, and that not the other the other 995 things. Not that they're not important, but they're not the most important. And I think those that struggle with that, conversely, are the ones trying to do a million things at once, and ultimately, nothing is really that successful for that reason. So I love seeing those that can prioritize and then communicate those priorities and get everybody on board.
It sounds like what you've learned is prioritize and then focus and then communicate.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
stay focused on those top three or four or five things that are most important. And keep the team focused on that too. Keep the eye on the ball.
Right.
Don't get
Yeah.
distracted by bright, shiny objects or lessons.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you think about this, you've been now, let's see, you've been in, this is beginning of 2024. You are what, 5 years into this now, almost 5 years into this. What do you think it's unique about you that you bring to the table that makes Scalero so successful?
Yeah. I alluded to this a little bit early on with my kind of tongue-in-cheek reference to the Midwest, but I do take that really, really seriously of being a genuine person, being myself, being kind, thinking of others. That's something I try to convey, and I hope I do consistently, and I think that's helped us a lot in just not being so cutthroat all the time in business and establishing relationships and just helping out somebody one time means maybe a year later they'll be able to help you out. Or maybe they'll become a business partner and there's financial incentive to that as well. So I think we've built a culture here of good people, good attitudes, and I think our clients see that and our customers see that, and we just want to be a pleasure to work with as well. And that kind of trickles down across the board, where we also want to have a good balance. If a part of being a good person is doing things for yourself and prioritizing the right thing. So between family and work and friends, we want to make sure that all of that is available and prioritized for me and the team.
Work-life balance. I mean, this kind of flows into work-life balance, and that the whole concept of work-life balance has been a huge part of your leadership, where you felt you really think that it's critically important. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I have a 3-year-old daughter right now that I've tried to prioritize, as much as I can. And I think, for anybody, whether you're running a company or not, you have a lot of things tugging at you at all times. So I do my best to lead by example with the team that it is not about work 100% of the time. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't thinking about work almost 100% of the time. But it doesn't mean I'm in front of the computer actually doing things. I think there's a healthy separation between executing and maybe brainstorming stuff later, or ideas coming to you. But with a small kid, there's really no, I have to be present, right? You can't sit with a 3-year-old and be doing other things, because she will call me out immediately on it, right? She'll tell me to, Daddy, listen to me, Dad, pay attention, let's do this. So that's my focus, is go all in on that when I'm with her, go all in on work when I'm working, and then try to take some time for myself too. And my team knows that, around 5 o'clock most days, I'm going to be offline at that point. And if something didn't get done by 5 o'clock, then I'm not going to sacrifice those next few hours to get that done. So I like to think that creates a nice example, for the team, where they can see me try to create some balance in my life. And if the one of the founders can do it, then anyone can.
Did you find that your team is able to do that? They're able to prioritize their life appropriately.
I hope so. I don't sometimes, and when I see that they're not, or maybe I think what's common in our space of being a services company, largely services company, is you want to take a day off, but then you have your clients need something from you, and instead of maybe asking someone to do it for you or saying this can wait. You just do it. You don't take your day off. So we see that sometimes, and that, and try to call that out every single time. Say, hey, it's, vacations are part of the game here. Take your day off. We'll figure out how to communicate to clients. Clients take vacations too. Like it's not that serious, right? We used to always say at Target, we're not saving babies here. Like let's take a step back and relax sometimes. So yeah, if we see someone not able to figure out the balance, we try to dig into it and figure out why and solve it.
Wow, good for you. I guess your organization is still small enough that you can do that, keep track of people.
Yeah,
Okay.
we are. Yeah, we're around 30 people. So that's I like this size a lot. It's been a comfortable size for us where, we're still really nimble and flexible, but people can take a day off and things don't fall apart.
Yeah, fun. So this show's called Listening with Leaders, and I always like to ask the question, and I can sense how this is going to go. How important has listening been in your career and in your work now as a CEO, co-founder of Scalero?
I think my listening skills were really honed in when I was at Vivino, because I was working with people from many different cultures and countries and time zones and everything else. So you really don't have a choice but to listen intently because things are communicated quite differently than in my day to day. So you learn what they're trying to say, what's important there. And then, moving into this role at Scalero, I mean, like I said, we're mostly services business. So by definition, we need to be servicing our clients, which means we need to listen to them and understand their problems. And, we're in a very niche space, focused on email lifecycle marketing. So many of the problems our clients have are actually quite similar to each other, but they communicate it in very different ways. And so part of my job is to try to listen to what they're really saying, what's really the problem here, and then bring that to some of the services that we offer and kind of match the two up, right? So then we can then do what we do best because we want to streamline what we're doing. We don't want custom solutions to everything. So how do we take one of our existing processes and align that with what they're conveying? And make both sides, a winner in that case. So yeah, I'm intently listening and trying to translate, what people are telling me at all times so that we can give them the right service.
What happens, I'm sure you've had this experience where you get a customer who's a little bit disgruntled. How do you guys, you and your team deal with the disgruntled client?
Yeah, as I'm sure many listeners can relate to that. That usually is when the call is made, to the to the founder is when things are not great, right? We don't
Stuff
usually get the
on your
phone call
desk,
to talk about,
right?
yeah, we don't get the phone call about how amazing things are. So yeah, that's the most important listening, that can be done, is during those moments. And one of my techniques is to always repeat back what I'm hearing, just to make
Summarize.
sure there's no. Yeah, there's no misinterpretation here of the situation because the situation could be something we did wrong, something we're at fault, or it could be circumstances or nothing at all. But get on that same page with the disgruntled customer, and then leave there with a few steps on how it's going to be solved and kind of appease that in the moment.
Yeah, what I teach people how to do, and people like you, CEOs and founders, is to not only paraphrase, but to also listen to and reflect the emotions of your irate customer, where you say, "Hey, man, you're pretty frustrated, you're pissed off, you don't feel like you're being heard, you don't feel like you're being supported, and the whole thing is making you anxious." And when you reflect their emotions in that way, they calm down. Some amazing neuroscience behind that that shows how this all works at a biophysiological level. And so what I teach my students is de-escalate, then problem solve. So try not to jump into problem solving right away. Wait on the problem solving until people are calmed down. Then you can invite in the problem solving. So it sounds like you're,
We
oh, go ahead.
Well, Brant and I often discuss kind of the what's really going on, situation, and that's usually pretty telling, and can humanize the person a little bit at times too. So it might be, the founder. It could be the founder and business is losing traction, and it's losing revenue, and there's a lot of pressure on them, or somebody has a new boss, and that boss is asking them a lot of questions, so therefore they're pushing us harder. We understanding that is often a
Well,
key
that's
for
it.
us to
That'd be
unlock some of this.
exactly right. Because rarely, it's probably rarely a screw up that you guys have done, but people are pushing you because they're getting pushed from different directions with different energies. And that's when it's even more important to get them calmed down and make them feel like they've really been deeply heard. And then when they feel deeply heard, then they trust you and you can have that problem-solving conversation and be really effective. So yeah, it's good to ask a question. What's really going on here? That's the right question to ask. Hopefully you don't have too many of those phone calls. But
No, hopefully not.
it happens, especially with new businesses. And you guys probably have a lot of clients and you face these problems. And the idea is, how can I take this difficult conversation and transform it into something that's going to be really positive for both the customer and for us? And that's learning how to do that's a huge leadership skill that a lot of people have never managed to master.
Yeah, it's very challenging. You're balancing a lot of different types of personalities, right? And different situations. So it takes a lot of practice. I think it has taken a lot of practice, and I'm sure there's plenty of improvements to still be made. I'll have plenty more difficult conversations going forward. That's just the nature
I
of it.
mean, you never stop learning. I'm 73 years old and never stop learning. I mean, stop learning, you stop growing. You start dying.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you're much younger, but it's amazing. If you keep your mind open, growth mindset, Carol Dweck, how amazing your life can be.
Absolutely.
So one more question, I'll let you go. What's one thing, Will, about yourself that we wouldn't know about unless you revealed it to us?
Well, I am a I'm a tennis player. That may not be that revealing. I think what's interesting about it for me was tennis was kind of this blessing and curse for me growing up. So I played very seriously, and as I reflected on it and got a little older and played some in college, I realized I really didn't like tennis at all. And I was playing for all the wrong reasons, and I quit. And I quit for a very long time. And then at the same time, as I think back on a lot of skills it gave me in terms of problem solving and independent thinking and some mental toughness, even though it maybe didn't feel like it at the time, I'm very grateful for the experience I did have in tennis. And I've actually started to play a little bit again, in trying to avoid the same pitfalls I had of not enjoying something you did all the time. So yeah, I'm dabbling back in. I do still really like the sport, and I try to take the good out of it as opposed to a lot of the bad that I was taking when I was younger.
That is a great lesson in life. Good job.
Thank
But thank you
you.
so much. Thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Doug.
You're welcome, Will.
Doug Knoll here. Thank you so much for listening to Listening with Leaders. If you are a successful executive leader who would like to be on this program, please visit podcast.dougknoll.com/podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you please share this episode on social media? Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on the social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag ListeningWithLeaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to my website, DougKnoll.com, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. That's @Douglas E. Knoll. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next show.